the English vocal cooperative Chumbawamba and their 1988 a cappella album English Rebel Songs, 1381-1914. That's our focus on this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie.
Oh, where are you going, said Milda to Malda?
Oh, we may not tell you, said Vessel to Fold.
We're off to the woods, said John the Red Nose.
We're off to the woods, said John the Red Nose.
Oh, what will you do there, said Milda to Malda?
Oh, we may not tell you, said Vessel to Fold.
We'll shoot the cutty wren, said John the Red Nose.
We'll shoot the cutty wren, said John the Red Nose.
The Cutty Wren, a song written at the time of the Peasants' Revolt of 1381, as performed in the late 20th century by the English vocal cooperative Chumbawamba. The history of that song will be touched upon later in this program. As for the background of the singers, this passage is from the group's Wikipedia listing. Chumbawamba was formed in 1982 from two other bands in Yorkshire, The Passion Killers and Chimp Eats Banana. Inspired by The Fall musically and Crass, their anarchist politics, Chumbawamba's activities in their early years were based around a communal house in Armley, Leeds. Stalwarts of the cassette culture scene, the band featured on many compilations. Chumbawamba were at the forefront of the 1980s anarcho-punk movement, frequently playing benefit gigs in squats and small halls for causes such as animal rights, the anti-war movement, and community groups. In 1988, the group recorded the album we'll be hearing in this week's program, English Rebel Songs, 1381-1914. The songs themselves are precisely what the title says, with no instrumentation except for occasional percussion. The history of the individual songs I'll be reading directly from the note booklet of the CD. And one particular note should be made. The album was remade with an additional track in 2003. What we'll be hearing is the album as originally recorded and released in 1988. Now, the note history for the second song on the album. The Digger's Song was written in 1649 by Gerard Winstanley, leader of the Diggers. The Diggers, unable and unwilling to pay exorbitant rents to rich landlords, took over wasteland and began to build their own community. Time after time, they were attacked by local soldiers under orders from the priests and lords. Their growing crops were pulled up and discarded. The Diggers, staunch pacifists, were repeatedly beaten up, but offered no physical resistance. Moving from place to place and encouraging others to follow their example, they struggled on for 2 years, preaching a vision of common ownership of the land and shared labor. What happened to the Diggers should have taught us two things. First, by nature of their example, that common and equal work, without lords or masters, can be a practical alternative to the robbery and inequality of capitalism. Second, that a willingness to accept the violence and destruction of the state without fighting back is, in the end, self-destructive. St. George's Hill, the most famous of the Diggers' plots of squatted land, is now a highly select residential area full of well-to-do stockbrokers.
You noble diggers all, stand up now, stand up now. You noble diggers all, stand up now. the wasteland to maintain. Seen cavaliers by name, your digging does maintain, and persons all defame. Stand up now, stand up now. Your houses they pull down, stand up now, stand up now. Your houses they pull down, stand up now. Your houses they pull down to fright your men in town, but the gentry must come down and the poor shall wear the crown. Stand up now, diggers all, with spades and hoes and ploughs. Stand up now, stand up now, with spades and hoes and ploughs. Stand up now. Your freedom to uphold, seen cavaliers are bold to kill you if they could, and rights from you to hold. Stand up now, diggers all, the gentry are all round. Stand up now, stand up now, the gentry are all round. Stand up now. The gentry are all round, on each side they are found, their wisdom so profound, to cheat us of our ground. Stand up now, stand up now. The lawyers they conjoin, stand up now, stand up now. The lawyers they conjoin, stand up now. To arrest you they advise, such fury they devise, the devil in them lies, and hath blinded both their eyes. Stand up now, stand up now. The clergy they come in, stand up now, stand up now. The clergy they come in, stand up now. The clergy they come in and say it is a sin that we should now begin our freedom for to win. Stand up now, diggers all, against lawyers and against priests. Stand up now, stand up now, against lawyers and against priests. Stand up now. For tyrants they are both, even flat against their oath, to grant us they are loath, free meat and drink and cloth. Stand up now, diggers all, the club is all their law. Stand up now, stand up now, the club is all their law. Stand up now, the club is all their law, to keep poor men in awe, but they no vision saw to maintain such a law. Stand up now, diggers all.
The Colliers' March was inspired by the events of October 1782, when a march of workers into Birmingham demanded regulation of food prices. So strong and threatening was the march that officers of the town promised to curb the prices of malt, flour, butter, and cheese, knowing that any refusal would lead to food riots, arson, and looting. Around this time, such marches and riots were commonplace. Recent comments by MPs, cops, and media asserting that riots and attacks on police are unprecedented show how little we are taught of the history of mass violent action against the state. It has always been, and always will be, a feature of any imbalanced and unequal society. The black gentry in the song were the colliers from the black country around the English Midlands, whose march from Dudley into Birmingham was the subject of several songs and ballads. This song was written by John Freeth sometime around 1782.
The summer was over, the season unkind, in harvest a snow how uncommon to find. The times were oppressive, and well be it known that hunger will strongest offences break down. 'Twas then from their cells the black gentry stepped out,
with bludgeons determined to stir up a rout. The prince of the party who reveled from home was a terrible fellow and called Irish Tom. He brandished his bludgeon with dexterous skill, and close to his elbow was placed Bally Will. There instantly followed a numerous train, as cheerful as bold Robin Hood's merry men. Sworn to remedy a capital fault, and bring down the exorbitant price of the malt. From Dudley to Walsall they trip it along, and Hampton was truly alarmed at the throng. Women and children, wherever they go, shouting out, "Oh, the brave Dudley boys, oh!" With nailers and spinners the cavalcade join the markets to lower their flattering design. 6 days out of 7 poor nailing boys get little else at their meals but potatoes to eat. For bread hard they labour, good things never carve, and swore 'twere as well to be hanged as to starve. Such are the feelings in every land, nothing necessity's call can withstand. And riots are certain to sadden the year, when sixpenny loaves as 3 pounders appear.
General Ludd's triumph celebrates the Luddite Rebellion of 1812. Cockeyed history has meant that now we use the term Luddite to mean someone who hates progress. In fact, the original Luddites were opposed to progress which put them out of work, left them starving, and condemned their families to misery and hunger. Luddism was a fight against unemployment, and a fight against greedy bosses discarding workers in order to accumulate vast wealth, in much the same manner as modern media magnate Rupert Murdoch. When new machinery was introduced into the cloth finishing mills of northern England, making manual finishing redundant, working men decided to act together to prevent the loss of their livelihoods. Using the name Ned Ludd, a name signed on all proclamations, warnings, and death threats issued by the Luddites, they began smashing the new machines. Bosses who installed the new machines were attacked after dark. Machinery being transported to the mills was ambushed and wrecked. Great battles were fought between huge bands of Luddites and local regiments, posted to guard mills from attack. The Luddites originated in Nottingham and spread throughout Lancashire and Yorkshire. It was never discovered if General Ludd, their mythical leader, was based on any real person. Eventually, groups of Luddites were arrested and tried, some being hanged at York Castle. But it was for about 3 years that mill bosses were under constant threat of Luddite action. During this time, the Luddites had the widespread support of their communities.
No more chant your old rhymes about bold Robin Hood. His feats I do little admire. I'll sing the achievements of General Ludd, now the hero of Nottinghamshire. Brave Ludd was to measures of violence unused, till his sufferings became so severe, that at last to defend his own interests he roused, and for the great fight did prepare. The guilty may fear, but no vengeance he aims at the honest man's life or estate. His wrath is entirely confined to white frames and to those that all prices abate. Those engines of mischief were sentenced to die by unanimous vote of the trade. And Leduc and all opposition defy, was the grand executioner made. And when in the work he destruction employs, himself to no method confines. By fire and by water he gets them destroyed, for the elements aid his designs. Whether guarded by soldiers along the highway, or closely secured in a room, he shivers them up by night and by day, and nothing can soften their doom. He may censure great lords' disrespect for the laws, who ne'er for a moment reflects that foul imposition alone was the cause which produced these unhappy effects. Let the haughty, the humble no longer oppress, then shall Lud sheath his conquering sword. His grievances instantly meet with redress, then peace shall be quickly restored. Let the wise and the great lend their aid and advice, nor e'er their assistance withdraw, till full-fashioned work at the old-fashioned price is established by custom and law. Then the trade, when this arduous contest is o'er, shall raise in full splendor its head. And colting and cutting and squaring no more shall deprive honest workers of bread.
The early 1800s saw uprisings by many sections of the poor classes, naval mutinies, revolts by agricultural workers, etc., and inevitably the rise of trade unionism and the Chartists. Chartist anthem dates from the 1840s. A people's charter was drawn up in 1837 demanding more of a say for the masses of workers now slaving in factories and living in hovels. This charter, which developed into Chartism, demanded, amongst other things, votes for all adult males, annual parliaments, and secret ballots. The movement grew and spread, and split into different sections: moral force Chartism, which wanted lawful change through education, and physical force Chartism, which demanded armed interaction. Chartists in Birmingham rioted so much and so often that the city was placed under martial law. The then Home Secretary called on the middle classes to form volunteer corps, offering them arms and training, an open invitation to class war. Everywhere in England there were fights and battles between poor people and the military. Workhouses, built to squeeze further cheap labor from those who couldn't get work, were attacked and ransacked. Chartists at the same time placed huge emphasis on petitions to the government, up to 6 million signatures of the Third National Petition. Parliament was unmoved, whilst open rebellion and community action has the power to make demands, collected signatures can only make requests, and eventually the movement faded away after 1848, its calls for reform rejected out of hand by Parliament.
100 years, 1,000 years, we're marching on the road. The going isn't easy, yet we've got a heavy load. Oh, we've got a heavy load. The way is blind with blood and sweat, and death sings in our ears. But time is marching on our side, we will defeat the years. Oh, we will defeat the years. We men of bone, of shrunken shank, our only treasure doth. Women who carry at the breast as to the hungry of, oh, as to the hungry of. Speak with one voice, we march, we rest, and march again upon the years. Sons of our sons are listening to hear the Chartist cheers. Oh, to hear the Chartist cheers.
Song on the Times was written sometime between 1845 and 1850, just after the repeal of the Corn Laws, a repeal which promised to bring cheaper bread, higher wages, and more work. In fact, it brought increased food prices, lower wages, and factories on short time. Between these years, too, famine struck and devastated Ireland, starving thousands and prompting a further exodus of Irish people into England.
You working men of England, one moment now attend, while I unfold the treatment of the poor upon this land. For nowadays the factory lords have brought the labour low, and daily are contriving plans to prove our overthrow. So arouse you, sons of freedom, the world seems upside down. They scorn the poor man as a thief in country and in town. There's different parts in Ireland, it's true what I do state. There's hundreds that are starving, for they can't get food to eat. And if they go unto the rich to ask them for relief, they bang their door all in their face as if they were a thief. So arouse you, sons of freedom, the world seems upside down. They scorn the poor man as a thief in country and in town. Alas, how altered are the times, rich men despise the poor, and pay them off without remorse, quite scornful at their door. And if a man is out of work, his parish pay is small, enough to starve himself and wife, his children and all. So arouse you, sons of freedom, the world seems upside down. They scorn the poor man as a thief in country and in town. So to conclude and finish these few verses I have made, I hope to see before it's long men for their labor paid. Then we'll rejoice with heart and voice and banish all our woes. Before we do, old England must pay us what she owes. So arouse you, sons of freedom, the world seems upside down. They scorn the poor man as a thief in country and in town.
The Smashing of the Van was written to tell the story of the Manchester Martyrs, three Irishmen living in England who were hanged for the rescue of two Irish rebel leaders in 1867. The van, carrying Kelly and Deasy from their trial to Manchester jail, was ambushed near a bridge by armed Irishmen. Soldiers guarding the van were pushed aside as the locks on the fortified doors were shot off with a gun. A soldier inside the van with Kelly and Deasy was accidentally shot as the door was blown open at gunpoint, and the three men captured afterwards, although little sure evidence was offered, were sentenced to hang. The two Irishmen rescued from the van were never caught. Every year in Manchester, the three martyrs are commemorated by a march through the city headed by Republican pipe bands. A tiny loyalist counter-demonstration usually turns up to wave orange flags and hide behind the rows of police.
Attend, you gallant Irishmen, and listen for a while. I'll sing to you the praises of the sons of Erin's Isle. It's of those gallant heroes who voluntarily ran to release two Irish shamrocks from an English prison van. Hurrah, my lads, for freedom, let's all join heart and hand. May the Lord have mercy on the boys that helped to smash the van. On the 18th of September, it was a dreadful year, when sorrow and excitement ran throughout all Lancashire. At a gathering of the Irish boys, they volunteered each man to release those Irish prisoners out of the prison van. Hurrah, my lads, for freedom, let's all join heart and hand. May the Lord have mercy on the boys that helped to smash the van. In Manchester one morning those heroes did agree, their leaders Kelly and Deasy should have their liberty. They drank a health to Ireland and soon made up the plan to meet the prisoners on the road and take and smash the van. Hurrah, my lads, for freedom, let's all join heart and hand. May the Lord have mercy on the boys that helped to smash the van. With courage bold those heroes went, and soon the van did stop. They cleared the guards from back and front, and then smashed in the top. But in blowing open of the lock, they chanced to kill a man. So three men must die on the scaffold high for smashing of the van. Hurrah, my lads, for freedom, let's all join heart and hand. May the Lord have mercy on the boys that helped to smash the van. So now, kind friends, I will conclude, I think it would be right that all true-hearted Irish men together should unite. Together should sympathise, my friends, and do the best we can to keep the memories evergreen of the boys that smashed the van. Hurrah, my lads, for freedom, let's all join heart and hand. May the Lord have mercy on the boys that helped to smash the van. Hurrah!
The World Turned Upside Down dates from the mid-1870s. The idea of turning the world upside down is, in fact, centuries old, its origins rooted in customs and feasts. A dream of a new world where equality replaces division, where shared wealth replaces starvation, and where Lady Thatcher meets the royal family every week down at the Dole office.
Through eating too much supper before I went to bed, strange thoughts came on my slumber, strange thoughts came in my head. This world seemed topsy-turvy, and people of renown were doing the most peculiar things as the world turned upside down. I dreamt there was no workhouse, and there were no starving poor, and nations never did quarrel, nor never went to war. I thought all men were angels, and women ne'er wore a frown. Old maids, they had large families, as the world turned upside down.
Poverty Knock is a factory worker's song, written to be sung over the rhythm of the flying shuttles and clankings of mill machinery. Conditions in the cloth mills of the 1890s, when this song was written, were hot, noisy, and dangerous. Injury and even death from the awkward and unsafe weaving machines was commonplace. And yet the continual knocking of the shuttle was at least a surety that you'd be able to eat, guttle, in a time when unemployment still meant virtual starvation and misery. Far from bringing safer, more leisurely work, the advances in automation meant only that the bosses could screw more production out of fewer people for less money. When the Luddites to the cotton machinists to the print workers of modern times, the master-boss relationship remains unchanged. Threats of unemployment keep wages low, keeps workers in fear of a willing workforce waiting to step into any available job, and keeps the boss's profits high. For how long will these songs be sung? When will we sing only of pleasure, leisure, and victory?
Poverty, poverty now, my loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty now, gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty now, keeping one eye on the clock. I know I can guttle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty now.
Up every morning at 5, I wonder that we keep alive. Tired and yawning in the cold morning, it's back to the dreary old drive.
Poverty, poverty now, my loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty now, gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty now, keeping one eye on the clock. I know I can guttle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty now.
Oh dear, we're going to be late. Gaffer is stood at the gate. We're out of pocket, our wages they'll dock it. We'll have to buy grub on the slate.
Poverty, poverty knock, my loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty knock, gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty knock, keeping one eye on the clock. I know I can guttle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty knock.
And when our wages they'll bring, we're often short of a string. While we are fratching with gaffer for snatching, we know to his brass he will cling.
Poverty, poverty knock, my loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty knock, gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty knock, keeping one eye on the clock. I know I can guttle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty knock.
Sometimes a shuttle flies out and gives some poor woman a clout. There she lies bleeding, but nobody's heeding. Oh, who's going to carry her out?
Poverty, poverty knock, my loom is a-saying all day. Poverty, poverty knock, gaffer's too skinny to pay. Poverty, poverty knock, keeping one eye on the clock. I know I can guttle when I hear my shuttle go. Poverty, poverty knock.
Oh dear, my poor head it sings. I should have woven 3 strings, but threads are breaking and my back is aching. Oh dear, I wish I had wings.
Poverty, poverty knock.
Idris Strike Song was written in 1911 and sung on a music hall appeal to both general public and scabs who were breaking the Idris strike. In 1910, the women at the Idris Soft Drinks Factory, organized by the Federation of Women Workers, resisted 2 attempts at wage cuts. So the following year, the management tried instead to make the workers pay for the improved sanitary conditions, which the Union had forced the bosses to install. When the Federation resisted, its leader, a Mrs. Lowen, a widow with two children, was sacked outright. A strike followed. The management drafted in local unemployed men and boys who obviously were not part of the FWW. The strike was broken despite the strength of solidarity amongst the women, broken by the ranks of unemployed workers desperate for jobs. A jobless workforce then, as now, was the biggest single reason for the collapse of strikes and disputes. Despite the defeat, the will and resistance of the women echoed the strength of women's struggle for equality in the early part of the 20th century.
Have you been to work at Idris? No, we won't go in today, for we're standing by a comrade, and we'll never run away. She stood bravely by the Union, and she spoke up for us true. And if she gets the sack, no, we never shall go back, whate'er they do, whate'er they do. Now you boys who are washing bottles, it really is a shame to take the place of women. Don't you think you are to blame? Come with us and join the Union. Never heed what Idris say. We are out to right the wrong, and now we shan't be long. Hip hip hooray,
hip hip hooray.
Master Willie, Master Willie, you must give in once again. It was wrong to sack a woman with two children to maintain. 13 years she's faithful served you, though she was 3 minutes late. But our little sister Anne, why she never checked the man at the gate,
at the gate.
Oh, you great king in the palace, and you statesman at the top, when you're drinking soda water or imbibing ginger pop, think of some who work at Idris for very little pay, and who only get 9 bob for a most unpleasant job. Alack-a-day,
alack-a-day.
Now then, girls, all join the Union, whatever you may be, in pickles, jam or chocolate, or packing pounds of tea. For we all want better wages, and this is what we say. We are out to right the wrong, and now we shan't be long. Hip hip hooray,
hip hip hooray.
Hanging on the old barbed wire was written by soldiers in the trenches in the First World War. Designed to be sung whilst marching, the song is one of many showing the dissent and disgust at the way war perpetuates the inequalities of rich and poor. Those with the money give the orders, those without the money face the guns. And a brief note of personal nature. My grandfather taught me this particular song when I was a boy back about 1969.
If you want to find the general, I know where he is, I know where he is, I know where he is. If you want to find the general, I know where he is. He's pinning another medal on his chest. I saw him, pinning another medal on his chest. Pinning another medal on his chest. If you want to find the colonel, I know where he is,
I know where he is. I know where he is. If you want to find the colonel, I know where he is. He's sitting in comfort stuffing his bloody guts. I saw him, I saw him, sitting in comfort stuffing his bloody guts.
I saw him
sitting in comfort stuffing his bloody guts. If you want to find the sergeant, I know where he is. I know where he is. I know where he is. If you want to find the sergeant, I know where he is. He's drinking all the company rum. I saw him, I saw him, drinking all the company rum.
I saw him,
drinking all the company rum. If you want to find the private, I know where he is. I know where he is. I know where he is. If you want to find the private, I know where he is. He's hanging on the old barbed wire. I saw him, I saw him, hanging on the old barbed wire. I saw him hanging on the old barbed wire.
And finally, a reprise of the first song that we heard in today's program. The Cutty Wren was written at the time of the Peasants' Revolt in 1381. It tells the story of the capture of the Wren, a symbol for the king, and its division amongst the poor people. An ancient custom in those times declared that for one day in each year, the commoners would have the freedom of the kingdom, and it was on this day that the wren was hunted. The people obviously wanted more than this token relief from daily poverty and starvation. When the king tried to introduce a poll tax, further crippling the peasants, they ganged together and began to murder first the tax collectors and then the lords and bishops. The peasants had had enough. Opposition to the tax created a spontaneous revolutionary army. Under the leadership of Wat Tyler, a commoner from Colchester, the people marched through Kent into London. Palaces were ransacked. Archbishops were dispatched to meet their maker. For 9 days, the peasants had, in effect, control of England. The king proclaimed that servants, peasants, and commoners, all were now free people. The jubilation did not last long. At a prearranged meeting between Tyler and the king's courtiers, and out of sight of the peasant army, Wat Tyler was murdered. The huge people's army, too dependent upon his leadership, was divided and routed by the king's soldiers. The reintroduction of the poll tax in Britain over 600 years later suitably demonstrated the historical link of outright defiance and resistance across the centuries. The poll tax, both then and now, was scrapped.
Oh, how will you cut him up, said Milda to Milda?
Oh, we may not tell you, said Vassal to Fall.
With knives and with forks, said John the Red Nose.
With knives and with forks, said John the Red Nose.
And who'll get the spare ribs, said Milda to Milda.
Oh, we may not tell you, said Vassal to Fall.
We'll give them all to the poor, said John the Red Nose.
We'll give them all to the poor, said John the Red Nose.
And finally, the opening note for the note booklet of this CD. History is boring. Loads of half-truths strung together by academics. Everything you learnt at school, all the kings, queens, laws, wars, and battles, you forgot straight away. which means that real history, the lives of ordinary people, their struggles, and their victories, not the glorified lives of the rich, is lost under the mountains of knighthoods and life peerages. The real history of England is full of riots, revolutions, rebellions, and insurrections. It's a history of perpetual class war waged by the poor against the state, the clergy, and the landlords. And unlike the history we learn in school, the history of rebellion is something we can learn from, and it's a sight more interesting. Throughout England's history, whilst peasants and workers were marching, striking, and fighting, there have been radical ballads and songs, written to publicize and to inspire, written so that some particular piece of history can be passed on from generation to generation. The folk music of struggle, written by and for the common folk. Chumbawamba's own website is found at www.chumba.com. That concludes this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Doll Shoe Radio Creations, copyright 2006. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope that you will join us again at this same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.